And we welcome you to the Wednesday morning show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. I am really happy to be sitting opposite a faculty colleague, Dr. Ron Kronovich, who is professor of economics at Carthage College. One of the topics that we touched on yesterday with Professor Art Sears' visit to the program was the matter of tariffs. And on today's morning show, we're going to be exploring that in greater detail. What is a tariff? And we welcome you to the Wednesday morning show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. What are tariffs? What is the reason for implementing tariffs? Are they particularly good? Are they particularly bad? What is the nature of tariffs? And what is the matter of a trade deficit, which is one of the main reasons that President Donald Trump has given for implementing the tariff increases? And what has the effect been not only on our economy as a whole and the global economy, but more specifically on the stock market, which of course has been incredibly volatile over the last couple of weeks. We're going to explore all of this and more with Professor Kronovich, and I really appreciate him making time in his busy schedule to join us to explore this and more. Professor Ron Kronovich, we welcome you to the morning show.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Glad we can have this conversation. I should think that in some respects, this is an economics professor's dream, that is to be living in a time when so much is going on the economic front, so much that you need to talk about with your students. I should think just bringing in a newspaper or pulling up a newspaper on a screen, but all you have to do is look at the headlines to see the importance of economics playing out on a daily basis.
It is really a great time to be an economist. This moment reminds me a little bit of another moment, the year that I came to Carthage College, 2008, when the housing market was in free fall, the financial markets were crashing, unemployment was spiking, and many people were losing their homes. So this moment is much different than that, but we are seeing the stock market volatility. People are sustaining losses in their 401ks and so forth. Prices are starting to rise. They're going to rise further as the tariffs take hold. And this will certainly bring about other kinds of consequences. And the thing is that being an economist in an economic crisis is kind of like being an undertaker during a plague.
Mm.
It's sad because people are dying, but business is good.
Right.
So I'm getting a lot of calls.
I bet.
From people that want to try to make sense of what's happening.
Exactly. Well, you suggested, and I could not agree more, that one of the most important things that we could do today is talk about what is a tariff. And, of course, that's one of those terms that in the course of our daily lives, most of us very seldom utter, but I dare say most of us are much more acquainted with the term tariff, even if we don't precisely understand what tariffs are or how they work. So let's begin with Tariff 101.
Sure.
What is a tariff?
A tariff is a tax that we pay when we import products that are subject to the tariffs. A tariff is a tax that can be applied to products from a specific country. So I believe the current tariff rate on products from China is around 144%, something like that. The government can also levy tariffs, a tax on imports, on particular products, such as imported steel, regardless of where it comes from. The government can levy a tariff on products of a specific type from a specific country, right? So it's a tax that we pay. In addition to the price that the foreign merchant is charging us for the foreign product, we also pay this tax. And this tax doesn't go to the foreign company or the foreign government. It goes to the U.S. Treasury. Mm. The tax is collected by the U.S. government.
Right. So I was asking before we went on the air, and I know it gets quite complicated and also works differently in different scenarios, but let's just say somebody walks into Costco to buy a flat-screen TV, and the flat-screen TV that was $400 is suddenly $700.
Right.
And I think what most people would suspect is that Costco had to pay a lot more money to get that TV screen on their shelf. Thus, we have to pay more to take that flat screen TV home.
That's exactly right.
And is that the way it works then?
That's how it works, although people that aren't following the news so much might see that Costco's raised its prices and might think that Costco is being greedy or something like that. But what's happening is Costco has to get those TVs wholesale from the foreign manufacturers. Most of them are produced in China. So Costco has to pay a very large tax to the U.S. government in order to acquire those foreign televisions that it then sells in its store. So Costco then has to pass on some or all of that tax to the consumer, right? So if the tax comes to $300 a television, the Costco might charge the consumer $300 more, or Costco might eat some of that cost itself so that it doesn't have to raise the price on consumers as much.
Right. But the point is, in this example, that Costco is not writing a bigger check than normal to that television manufacturer in China.
Exactly.
It is, in a sense, writing a separate check.
Yes.
To the United States government.
That's right.
And I think for most of us, that is, you know, kind of the part of this that we don't begin to understand. So have tariffs been around for all of our country's history? Or do they kind of wink in and out of existence? I mean, for instance, if we trace the history of the United States, have we always had tariffs on somebody from something, from somewhere? Or do they only tend to get imposed at certain points in time?
Well, tariffs have been around for much longer than you and I. In the early years of the United States, even before we declared independence, there were tariffs. All industrialized countries imposed tariffs to raise revenue or to protect their own industries by making the foreign products artificially more expensive to incentivize their citizens to buy products made locally. But tariffs have gone in and out of fashion. Tariffs were last in fashion in the years leading up to the Great Depression. We had the Smoot-Hawley tariffs. Smoot and Hawley were members of Congress that sponsored the bill that passed raising tariffs to a very high level. And other countries retaliated against our tariffs on them by imposing their own taxes on our products. And that led to a crash in world trade, international trade, which made the Great Depression much worse than it would have been otherwise.
Mm.
So we kind of learned a lesson from that. And coming out of the Great Depression and coming out of World War II, the Western allies tried to build an open trade system where tariffs would be minimized to encourage people to buy the product wherever it can be produced most cheaply, and which might not necessarily be in their own country. But then their own country could specialize in products that they can make very efficiently and sell them to others.
Mm. One thing I want to make sure we do right now is make sure people understand. I think most public radio listeners certainly do understand that when we are talking about products from other countries, although I, for some reason, gravitated to a flat-screen TV you buy in Costco or wherever.
Are you in the market for a TV?
Not at the moment,
okay.
Fortunately. But we're also talking about things like bananas and mangoes and kumquats.
That's right.
And sometimes we forget that is a reality that is part of all this. But do tariffs on those kind of things, on agricultural products, essentially work the same?
Yes, more or less they work the same. The issue with agricultural products is there are some things we just can't grow in the United States, and there are other things that we can grow seasonally. So if we want fresh fruits and vegetables in January, we have to import them. We produce a very small amount of fresh fruits and vegetables other than root vegetables here in the United States over the winter. So if we want, you know, pineapple and bananas and things like that, we have to go to Mexico or Central America or South America for those. And we're able to buy delicious produce from other countries at lower costs during the winter. And, you know, everybody's happy. You know, they're getting our business and we're getting the fruits and vegetables that we want. And then when the weather starts warming up here, we become an exporter of produce to other countries.
So one of the questions that you posed as we talked about what we would discuss today was this very basic question of, are tariffs good or bad? And of course, in the phrasing of that, of course, the answer is yes and no, or yes,
correct,
period,
right,
or whatever. But it is probably a mistake to jump to any broad conclusions about all tariffs being good or bad. How would you, as an economist, answer that really basic question, or would you have us ask a different question than that?
Oh, I think it's a fine question to ask, are tariffs good or bad? And the answer is both. Tariffs have complicated effects, and some of them are beneficial and some of them are harmful. But it's worth thinking about what those effects are, so that we can make, so that we as consumers and also our policymakers in Washington, D.C. and elsewhere can make informed decisions about what's the best thing to do. But in terms of the impacts of tariffs, one common use of a tariff historically has been to help U.S. industries that are struggling to compete with cheap imports from other countries. So, for example, in 2003, President George W. Bush imposed tariffs on imported steel from Russia, Japan, and countries in South America, all of which could produce steel at much lower cost than we can. And we have a historic steel industry in the United States, especially in Pennsylvania. There are a lot of steel mills, and they were struggling to compete against these cheap imported steel. And as a result, many of these mills were on the brink, many of the American steel mills were on the brink of closure, and job losses were starting to pile up. And President Bush imposed tariffs on cheap imported steel in order to protect the U.S. steel industry and to save jobs in the U.S. steel industry.
So that would have been a case in which a president elected to use a tariff, in a sense, very strategically, I mean, pinpointing a particular sector, a particular product, and so
That's
on.
That's right.
And what we're, of course, talking about with President Trump early in his second term is the use of tariffs in a very different way.
That's right. But there are some lessons to be drawn from President George W. Bush's steel tariffs. The tariffs actually did save jobs in the U.S. steel industry, and that's a good thing, absolutely. But the tariffs raised the cost of steel for everybody in the United States, because either we had to pay extra to import foreign steel, we'd have to pay the price of the foreign steel, and then we'd have to pay the U.S. government the tariff, which is the tax added to imported steel, or we would have to pay higher prices for domestic steel. Now, you and I don't buy steel, I don't think, but we buy products made with steel. The construction industry uses a lot of steel to make houses and skyscrapers and freeways and bridges, things like that. Automakers use steel, and all of the products that are produced with steel then became more expensive, and those costs get passed on to consumers. So that was one negative impact of President George W. Bush's steel tariffs. Another negative impact is really kind of subtle, but it's very important. Tariffs have these unintended consequences that can actually wipe out the benefits, that can totally cancel out the benefits of the tariffs. So we talked about the benefits of the steel tariffs. They save jobs in the U.S. steel industry, and that is absolutely important. I mean, I don't want to see any U.S. workers lose their jobs because of competition from abroad. But tariffs on foreign products cause the U.S. exchange rate to appreciate a little bit. So the U.S. dollar rises in value compared to other countries' currencies. And that has some positive effects and some negative effects. The positive effects when the U.S. dollar appreciates include we can buy foreign products a little bit cheaper than we could otherwise because the U.S. dollar is worth more in terms of foreign currency. So we can import stuff more cheaply. A negative impact when the U.S. dollar appreciates in value is that other countries have to pay more to buy our products because they have to change more of their own currency into dollars to get the dollars they need to buy our products.
So it discourages them from purchasing our products.
Correct. So while the steel tariffs saved jobs in the U.S. steel industry, they ended up destroying jobs in U.S. export industries because people in other countries couldn't afford to buy U.S. products. They bought fewer U.S. products, and U.S. export industries struggled, and they sustained losses, and they let go of some of their workers. So we ended up saving jobs in the U.S. steel industry, but destroying jobs in other industries. So the tariffs have unintended consequences that completely are self-defeating. Wow. They cancel out the benefits.
For those of you just joining us, my guest today on The Morning Show is Ron Kronovich, professor of economics at Carthage College. And we are talking, as you're hearing, about tariffs and some of the reasons behind the dramatic moves that President Trump made earlier this month, beginning with Liberation Day. And with powerful, aggressive tariffs, and of course, we'll also be talking about some of the ways in which President Trump has pulled back from some of his initial announcements and what the effect of all of this has certainly been on the stock market and the bond market and so on. President Trump has been pretty clear that perhaps the single most significant reason for him to pursue this tariff policy has to do with trade deficits, and in his words, to stop certain countries from screwing us over, as
that's
in
right.
the United States.
Those are his words, not,
right.
not yeah. Greg Berg's
that's
words.
That's right. Might be the first time I've ever used that phrase over the air. But it has to do with this matter called trade deficits, which I suspect are also a bit more complicated than meets the eye in the same way that tariffs are. Explain what a trade deficit is and what President Trump is reacting to
sure.
in terms of trade deficits and in the implementation of this tariff policy.
Right. Okay. So a trade deficit occurs when we import more things than we export. So when we buy foreign products, we're spending money, and the foreign country is getting our money, and we're getting products. So we're giving them some of our business. When a foreign country buys U.S. products, they're giving us some of their business. They're buying our products, they're giving us money, and we're sending them our products. When we have a trade deficit, we're giving the foreign country more money than they're giving us. And President Trump sees that as a negative. He says that these foreign countries with whom we have trade deficits, and there are lots of them, they're screwing us over because we're giving them a lot of our business and they're not giving us very much of their business. So we're not able to sell as much stuff to them as they're selling to us. And President Trump sees that as a negative thing. And that's one of the reasons, one of his stated purposes of the tariffs is to discourage us from buying as many foreign products to kind of even out the trade balance between us and other countries. So when he announced his tariffs on Liberation Day, the big announcement with tariffs, very specific tariffs on products from many different countries, he showed a chart that showed how the tariff rate for each country would be determined. And basically, the tariff rate is higher on countries with which we have a bigger trade deficit. And the tariff rate is lower on countries with which we have a smaller trade deficit. And again, his thinking is that if we have a large trade deficit with a country, we're giving them a lot of our business. We're sending them a lot of our money, and they're not buying a lot of our stuff in return. So he thinks that that's a bad thing, and he wants to punish those countries which really ends up punishing our consumers because we pay higher prices because of the tariff. But it will punish those countries because we won't be buying as many of their products, and that'll hurt them. And he feels like that a tariff is an effective way to reduce our trade deficits. So he sees trade deficits as bad, and he wants to reduce them, and he's using tariffs to do that.
Hmm. Now, the way your particular turn of phrase suggests that trade deficits aren't necessarily bad.
That's correct.
Okay, so because on the surface, at least a cursory glance, mm-hmm. a trade deficit does kind of look like something that's not so great for America.
Sure.
So explain what complicates that picture and how a trade deficit, in fact, is not necessarily a negative at all.
So we have a trade deficit with China, which means we're buying more of their stuff than they're buying of our stuff, right? So they're getting more of our money and we're getting less of their money. But we are getting a lot of really good stuff at low prices, right? You have to remember that.
So we're not just sending our money to China for nothing.
We're getting a lot of stuff, you know, and they can produce a lot of things more cheaply than we can. So it kind of makes sense for us to buy products from China that they can make more efficiently or at lower cost than we could make here. And in return, we produce a lot of products that are better in quality and or produced at lower cost than products that other countries would be able to make in their own countries, right? So we sell trillions of dollars of exports to people in other countries. Now, there are some very poor countries in Africa that are rich in certain kinds of essential minerals that we need in manufacturing. And so we have trade deficits with some of those poor African countries because we're buying the essential minerals that we need for our production here. And the people there are too poor to buy our stuff. So if we impose a tariff on imports of those minerals from that country, we're just going to be punishing ourselves because we're going to be paying higher prices for the minerals that we need. Now, you and I don't buy minerals too much. Mm. But our manufacturing industry does. So our manufacturing industry is going to see higher costs. And some of those minerals are important for things like batteries and other kinds of, you know, solar panels and things like that. So many of our industries are going to have higher costs as a result of that.
Hmm. So one level of complexity here that you're talking about is that there can be different reasons for the United States to have a trade deficit with another nation. Sometimes that other nation is a powerhouse like China, mm-hmm. and sometimes it's a very poor nation like, I don't know, Chad or Mali or something, but some poor country in Africa, I mean, economically poor. Mm-hmm. And so there is a very different set of circumstances driving the existence of that trade deficit. But President Trump's policy with tariffs, it sounds like, at least at the outset, did not acknowledge that difference at all. It was, if the trade deficit is this large, then the tariff is this large.
That's right. That's exactly right. And so President Trump is operating under this idea of trade deficits as bad things. But, you know, like we talked about, trade deficits aren't bad because the country with the deficit is getting more products. And the country that has the surplus with the United States is getting fewer products. It all kind of balances out. The example that I use to explain to my students is that every week I go to Woodman's, our big grocery store on I-94 and Highway 50, and I spend probably $300 a month or so on groceries. So I'm buying their products, and they aren't buying anything from me. So I've got a huge, I have a huge trade deficit with Woodman's, right? I'm giving them my business and they're not buying anything from me. They're not buying, you know, a lecture on tariffs from me or anything like that, right? So, are they screwing me over? I don't think so, because what is my alternative to buying groceries at a grocery store? I could, you know, try to grow my own produce. I'm not very good at it. I don't have a lot of land. You know, I could buy a bunch of hens and produce my own eggs. That would, you know, I'm not very good at doing those things, and it would take a lot of time, and it would sort of cut into my teaching time, and I really like teaching. That's mm-hmm. what I do. Okay, so I teach at Carthage College, and Carthage College has a big trade deficit with me. They buy my services. They buy a couple $1,000s worth of my services every month, and I buy nothing from Carthage, save the occasional T-shirt or something like that, right? So they have a trade deficit with me. So am I screwing them over? I hope not. Mm-hmm. You know, so I just think that that seeing trade deficits as fundamentally bad because one side is getting more money than the other side ignores the fact that the other side is getting more products or services.
Right.
And it's a mutually, you know, if the two parties are engaging in trade voluntarily, it must be because each of them feels they're better off by trading with somebody in another country than by producing them the thing themselves.
Right. I suppose this could look different, could be interpreted through a particular lens depending on where you are in the United States. So, for instance, if you are someone living in Gary, Indiana, or some other part of what we think of as the Rust Belt that
right.
has been
sure.
really hit hard and where a once robust manufacturing economy is not anywhere near what it used to be. For somebody living within those circumstances, a trade deficit looks like it's a very unfortunate thing, depending on whereas someone who is living someplace else or exists in another sector of the economy might look at it very differently. So
right.
that complicates all this too.
But the trade deficit is just the symptom. It's not the cause of the problem. So the person in the Rust Belt who sees industry around them in decline, it's not the trade deficit's fault. It's something else. It's the production is more efficient in another country, or we have neglected to invest in our own industries to keep them modern and efficient, or, you know, something else is happening. It's not the fault of the trade deficit, and just trying to make the trade deficit go away is putting a bandage on a wound that needs a lot more than just a bandage.
Right. So I think the presumption is that if tariffs are an effective way to deal with the trade deficit we have with various countries, that one of the potential benefits of some of this tariff policy would be a rebuilding of our own manufacturing sector, that it will make American goods a bit more attractive than they would otherwise be.
Sure.
And
it'll make America great again.
So I suspect you're going to say that correlation is not quite that simple, or that this policy perhaps is not going to directly lead to that, or at least not anytime soon. I mean, how would you interpret that facet of this tariff policy and the potential that it could actually inject new life into our manufacturing base?
Right. Well, Greg, what you just explained is one of President Trump's stated reasons for imposing these tariffs. He wants to bring industry back to the United States so that we're producing more of our own stuff and we're not as dependent on foreign countries. And he believes, with some justification, that stimulating industry in the United States will be good for the economy. There will be more jobs, more production, more manufacturing jobs. We've lost a lot of manufacturing jobs over the last 50 years to other countries. And, you know, he believes that the tariffs are a way to reverse that, right? So that, you know, that is a goal that has a lot of merit. You know, there's a lot of appeal in the idea of bringing industry back to the United States and making us an industrial power like we were before, and bringing, you know, jobs and wealth and things like that. So, yeah, that all sounds great. Unfortunately, bringing industry back is much harder and more complicated than it sounds. It's not just a matter of imposing tariffs on automobiles from other countries and so that U.S. automakers build more factories and we build more autos here, right? It's not just that. Supply chains have gotten so complicated. Even simple products like salad dressing are made from ingredients sourced from all over the world.
Mm.
And Panera Bread was asked by some researchers to talk about their supply chains, and they couldn't even say something as simple as the salad dressing on their Greek salad, where all of the stuff comes from, right?
Wow.
Supply chains are just incredibly complex, and to abandon them and just try to produce everything here is going to be extremely complicated. There's going to be a very painful transition. And to the extent we are able to bring manufacturing back here, the products that we end up producing are going to be much more expensive. There's a reason why we look for ingredients for the salad dressing in countries all over the world, and ingredients for the iPhone and other complex items. Why we have complicated supply chains, and that's because we're able to produce things much cheaper by sourcing components and parts of the production process from different places around the world where it can be done most cheaply. Mm. And we would lose that if we brought it all back to the United States.
Right. And of course, one thing we haven't even talked about yet is retaliatory tariffs from other countries, which upset the balance of this. I mean, that we impose this tariff, so that country does exactly the same thing to us.
Yep.
And so it creates quite an unpredictable situation, which of course in turn, which is what we'll talk about now, creates incredible volatility on the stock market. I wonder if you could give us some sense of just how volatile things have been on Wall Street in the wake of President Trump's announcement on April 2nd of his tariff policy, which he called Liberation Day.
That's right.
What have we seen since, at least in summary form?
So on April 2nd, after these tariffs were announced, stocks fell, markets fell 10 or 12%. Some stocks were hit harder than others, but market indexes like the Dow Jones Industrial Average, the S&P 500, and the NASDAQ fell around 10 or 12%. And, the stock market has been sort of going up and down with very, very wild swings, like huge losses one day, significant gains the next that don't completely make up for the losses. So they're, stocks are lower now, even though we've had a few days where stock prices have risen. But so there are two bad things here. One is that stocks are lower now, so there's the decrease, and that means that the savings that people have in their 401ks or whatever they're using to save money for retirement are worth a lot less now. So a lot of people I know, the savings in their retirement accounts have dropped by the equivalent of 1 to 2 years worth of their salary. So these are people in their 50s, they're thinking about retiring in 10 or 15 years, and their savings have shrunk by 1 to 2 times their annual salary. What that means then is unless the stock market miraculously recovers, they're going to have to delay retirement by 1 to 2 years, or if they want to retire at the same age as before, they're going to have to do so on much less money. Hmm. And, when you're medical care is expensive and senior citizens are the group that has the most need for medical care, and you really don't want to be in a position of retiring without significant financial resources, because if, God forbid, you need an operation or some kind of medical treatment, you want the resources to be there for that, and you want to have a decent standard of living and things like that, right? So one of the problems that we see is that asset prices are lower and people's wealth is lower. When I say wealth, I'm not talking about the wealthy, although the wealthy have certainly lost a lot of wealth like everybody else. I think they're going to be okay, though. But people, sort of middle class, working class people who are just saving for retirement, they're seeing the value of their savings drop, and that makes them feel poor. And that makes, when you feel poor, you spend less money. So the businesses that you shop from get less revenue. So they sustain losses and they have to let go of some workers, and there's just this downward spiral. So the loss in people's wealth is one big problem. Another problem that's just as important is the volatility. The stock market is subject to wild swings over the last month because the Trump administration keeps changing their policies. They announce tariffs, and then a couple days later, they announce a pause on the tariffs, and then a couple days later, they announce new tariffs, and then they exempt certain product classes from tariffs. So the iPhone is a big import from China, where it's assembled. The iPhone is actually made from parts all around the world. There's an extremely complicated supply chain, but the iPhone comes to us from China, and the tariffs on Chinese imports were going to make iPhones much more expensive, and that would have made U.S. consumers mad. But then President Trump decided to exempt certain electronic products from China, including iPhones, from these tariffs. Right? So there's just a lot of uncertainty because the policy announcements keep changing. Every week there are one or two or three big changes in policy. And that's been driving the stock market to be very volatile. And that volatility means we live in a period of great uncertainty. And uncertainty itself, even if prices were not trending down, the uncertainty is bad. Because anybody who's making a long-term financial decision, whether it's a person deciding whether to buy a house, or a corporation deciding whether to build a new factory to produce, say, electric vehicles, and should they build the factory at all, or should they build it in China, or should they build it in Mexico or the United States? People are making long-term decisions, and they need to have some information about what the future is going to look like so they can make good decisions. And when things are crazy volatile, when stock prices are just swinging wildly from week to week or from day to day, and the fortunes, the prospects of businesses are changing sharply from week to week or day to day, people decide to just not make the decision. So the factory doesn't get built. The house doesn't get bought. And that means that, there's less economic activity happening in the United States, and that creates the environment in which a recession becomes likely. A recession is a period of economic contraction. People's incomes are shrinking, not growing. Jobs are shrinking, so there's more unemployment. And people who are unemployed, of course, can't spend any money. So it's just kind of a downward spiral. So just the uncertainty and the volatility is creating costs. I read this morning in the paper that the advertising industry in the United States, which is over $300 billion industry, is starting to see huge losses because companies, not knowing whether the tariff is going to apply to their product, don't know how to market their product. Like, they don't know whether they can market it as, a more efficient, like a better iPhone than the iPhone or whatever. They don't know how to market their products. They don't even know if it's going to be economical for them to sell certain products anymore. So what they're doing is they're just canceling their advertising contracts until they have more stability and a better sense of what's coming in the future. So the $300+ billion advertising industry is starting to sustain serious losses.
That's such an important point because I think, for most of us, that would never even dawn on us that would be a significant element of all of this.
It didn't dawn on me until I read the newspaper this morning.
Wow. So it's not only sort of the core, but it's also everything adjacent to the core.
That's right.
That also feels the ramifications of this uncertainty.
Absolutely.
And of course, and a big part of what you're talking about, as you said, is for the folks who might think about building a factory or expanding their number of stores or whatever it might be.
Exactly.
I mean, it's very likely that nobody will be doing anything like that in the near future because of this. One of the things that I have read, just back specifically to the matter of the stock market, is that we are talking about trillions of dollars in losses.
That's right.
it's sort of staggering. I mean, in a sense, it underscores the immensity of the U.S. economy.
That's
that,
right.
That trillions of dollars could disappear essentially overnight, and the impact not be even worse than it is. I mean, that's probably, that loss is far larger than the entire probably GNP of certain nations on Earth.
Absolutely.
Can you help us understand the consequences of those kind of losses, and how do we recover from a loss like that?
That is a great question. The consequences are, as people see the value of their savings, most people's savings are invested in the stock market. Many full-time workers have retirement plans through their employer. So you and I work for Carthage College, and we have a retirement plan through that. And those kinds of plans typically invest workers' savings into mutual funds, which are collections of different kinds of stocks. So as the stock market crashes, people's savings drop and their wealth drops. And even if their income doesn't change, even if you're still making $63,000 a year like you were last year, you have less wealth now. And people save for a reason. They save for retirement. Young families save so that when their children are 17 or 18, they can send them to an outstanding, one of the country's top colleges like Harvard University, Carthage College, Stanford University, Gateway Technical College, you know, one of these fantastic schools, because it's hard for kids to pay for schools on their own. So parents like to save up for that, right? And if a parent is saving money to help send their kids to college, and now their savings are 10 or 20% smaller, they're going to cut back on spending to try to build those savings back up. And people are generally cutting back on spending, partly because they have less wealth because of the stock market crash, and partly because of all the uncertainty. And when people cut back on their saving, they're just, you know, businesses that they buy stuff from see their revenues fall. And then those businesses are in trouble, and they've got to cut back. They have to close some stores, let go of some workers, and it's just kind of a downward, you know, kind of a snowball effect.
Well, and what you're painting then is a picture of recession.
That's right.
When an economy stops growing, when it begins to, in a sense, recede or deplete itself.
That's right.
That's the state that we know of as recession.
And Greg, to this point, you mentioned earlier about retaliatory tariffs. So if we're imposing tariffs on China, which we are, very high tariffs, China retaliates by imposing tariffs on our products. So if Chinese citizens want to buy products from the United States, they now have to pay much higher prices to buy those products. Now, China has a lot of people, and they need to import food. And China is an outstanding customer of U.S. farmers. About one-fifth of the value of crops in the state of Wisconsin are sold to China. Mm. And if China imposes a tariff on everything from the United States, then Wisconsin farmers are going to lose business. They're going to lose up to one-fifth of their revenue, right? So in 2017, when President Trump imposed tariffs on certain products from China, like washing machines, China retaliated by imposing tariffs on crops from the United States, and Wisconsin farmers were hurt. So President Trump sent money to Wisconsin farmers and other farmers, right? So that's a cost for the U.S. government to help people not be so impacted by retaliatory tariffs. But there are so many retaliatory tariffs now that the U.S. government can't afford to bail out everybody, right? So people just are, you know, businesses are going to suffer because they're not selling as much stuff to foreign countries. So, and this is happening in all countries. So what happens is there's a fair likelihood of a global recession. Many countries are going to experience recessions because of this trade war. Hmm.
If you were in a position to advise President Trump, first of all, I would suspect you would have advised him you know, not to go down this path in the first place. I glean that from what you've been saying today. But were you in a position to advise him now in terms of the best path forward? I mean, and you're not a political science professor, but in terms of ameliorating the impacts of what you have been describing, what would your advice be to him? I mean, to pull back altogether from this policy or otherwise, what would you have him do?
Well, I don't think that President Trump would take my advice. I would respectfully urge him in the strongest possible terms, but respectfully, to declare victory, to say that the United States won. We extracted concessions from our trading partners or whatever he has to say to make it sound like this is a victory for the United States, and therefore we don't need the tariffs anymore. There's a lot of damage that's been done and it's going to take years to recover from. But I think that that's the best case scenario now, is if the tariffs go away and other countries drop their retaliatory tariffs against the United States, then, you know, we can sort of clean up our mess. It'll take a while, but and also, you know, our reputation has been damaged in the international community, right? Our policies have been erratic and they've caused harm. Our immigration policies have been erratic, and you know, that's a separate issue for other people who know more about that stuff for you to talk about. But you know, there's been some damage that's going to take a while to recover. But starting now, if we just start now and get rid of the tariffs, if President Trump needs to pitch this as, you know, frame this as a victory for his policies, that's fine, as long as we can get rid of the tariffs and try to, you know, mop up the casualties and keep going.
Right. Well, it will be interesting to see if anything like that, of course, occurs. And I suppose his move to make certain exemptions and so on might be perhaps a step in that direction. But who knows? It will be interesting to see what decisions he and his advisors make about this so really critically important matter. In the
Absolutely.
Meantime, I appreciate the time that you've taken to join us today on the morning show to talk us through much of what has been going on and giving us some sense of what might be on the horizon for us, for each of us individually, of course, and for us collectively as a nation and globally, what might be potentially ahead for the global economy. Because like it or not, we live in a global economy. And
that's right.
And there is. Although probably there are some people who would like to turn back the clock on that, that is the world in which we live. And so I think you've helped us understand the complexity of that world a little bit better. Dr. Ron Kronovich, professor of economics at Carthage College, I thank you so much for being here today. I hope we can have further conversations about this moving forward.
Me too, and it's really been a pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
It's 8:58, and tomorrow on the morning show, we'll talk about something altogether happier. Tomorrow we will celebrate April as National Poetry Month by sharing with you an interview from way back in 2001 with Peggy Mosher-Mosby, who was one of the editors of an amazing book called Poetry Speaks, which celebrates the work of some great poets over the last century with a book that not only talks about them but also has a companion recording in which we can hear the voices of some of these great poets reading their own works. It's a wonderful step back in time and a wonderful way to celebrate the unique art of poetry. That is tomorrow on the morning show. And we do remind you that there'll be no broadcast Friday or Monday because of the holiday, but you can continue to hear the morning show 7 days a week by subscribing to the podcast version of the program. Look for the morning show with Greg Berg. Our forecast today is for mostly sunny skies with a high of 47 degrees. We'll have partly cloudy skies overnight with a low of 36 degrees. Looks like we'll have partly cloudy skies on Thursday, a chance of showers developing Thursday night into Friday. This is WGTD HD, Kenosha Racine,